Good morning, Pensacola. It is Monday, March 20th. It is so good to be back with you. Golly, March Madness is on us. It was fantastic in Birmingham. I got to see Houston, which I tell you what, Houston, number one seed. They're long and lanky. They're a lot like the Wimp Sanderson teams Alabama had in the 80s and 90s. Very, very lean. They looked, Alabama also looked very, very good. A lot of brackets got busted. You had Purdue get knocked out by Fairleigh Dickinson. You know, what? You've got Princeton, who's still in the dance. They ended up beating Arizona, then going ahead and beating Missouri yesterday, or on Saturday. You've got Michigan State has done really well. Texas is out there. Arkansas is another surprise team. So in the last, in the Sweet 16, the underdogs that are out there that weren't supposed to be there, you're looking at San Diego State, Creighton, Florida Atlantic's a 9 seed. Arkansas was an 8 seed. And, of course, Princeton a 15 seed. So those are the biggest ones out there. Two number ones were knocked off, Purdue and Kansas. That was Arkansas's doing. So it's going to be really fun to watch. Big upset in the women's side. Ole Miss beat Stanford, the number one team at Stanford's home court.
Hotty toddy.
So that was a huge upset. SEC did really well. They've got three teams. I think the Big Ten only has one in the big team. ACC only has one. So we've done pretty well. So we're pretty happy with it. Today is a, well, this week is going to be a lot going on. Today, the school board is meeting. They've got four more books on their plate that they'll be looking at today. One of them's a book written by Toni Morrison, which is, again, we're going after race all over again. But that goes before the board today. This afternoon, the Republicans are rallying the pitchforks. They're going to be there. Democrats are going to be there with their pillows. And who knows who else will show up. We've got a former Escambia County educator who really has come out strongly against what's happening in our school system with removing these books off the shelves. And we'll have her on at 8 o'clock and give her side of what she sees is happening. Then tomorrow the school board is going to meet on whether or not to pass a resolution that we do another referendum on elected versus appointed superintendent. And that's on the agenda tomorrow. So we've got those things on top of us. And we'll be at both of those. We'll have people at both of those things that are going on. So keep that, and we'll see how that plays out. But we'll have Linda on. We've got a great show. We've got Walker Wilson, Downtown Improvement Board. They've got a roundtable coming up. We'll have Walker talk about it. Jim Ryan with ABC News. They've got this new software they're using to deal with shoplifting. He'll be on. Rebecca Morris, Leap. Their big project this year, she'll be talking about it. Tracy Hodson with Favor House will be on. They're going through a major renovation, which has been really needed. We'll talk about it. And then we'll have Linda Fussell, who will be his former educator, will talk to us about how she's trying to rally people to speak up for literature in our school system. So we'll have her on. So that covers a lot of different things that we've got going on. There are, over the weekend, I got news of it this morning, the Florida Best Beer Awards. They announced their gold, silver, and bronze medals. McGuire's Irish Pub, they won a gold for their in the category of International Stout. It's their classic Irish-style dry stout. There were 18 entries. They won. Big Top Brewing Company, Hazy Skywire, won a gold medal. They're in the juicy or hazy strong pale category, where there were 16 entries. Those are the two gold medalists that we have: McGuire's, Big Top Brewing, and silver medals, Coastal County Brewing. They're up on Olive Road. They won the Irish Style Red Ale with Fred's Red Irish. They won the American Style Cream, or came in second place, silver award. An American-style cream ale with their Coastal Cream Ale. Perfect Plain Brewing also got a silver with their Yacht Side, which was in the fruit beer category. Gozen, Emerald Republic Brewing Company's beer. They won in the. They also got a silver in the Fruited American Style Sour Ale. Bronze medals. Big Top got a couple of beers there. Perfect Plain did. McGuire's Irish Pub did. St. Michael's Brewing Company in Navarre became a bronze medal. Alga Beer was also a bronze medalist with their honey beer. And Emerald Coast Republic Brewing Company got their coffee beer. In the coffee beer category, got Zero Type. Was a zero year zero was the winning brew for them, and that was a bronze medal. I have all this stuff a little bit on the blog later. If you want to know more about Linda Fussell and get ahead of us when we have the interview, I've opened up the blog this morning with the letter that she now sent out to her supporters arguing for these books and that pointing out that we already have set up in the school system before we started removing books from shelves. Parents had the right to decide what books their kids could read, what books they could check out. If they a lot of these things were electives, they weren't forced on any child. But the problem is now if a parent wants their child to read these books, they can't do it in the school system. If they go and ban four more books. Right now we've got five books on the banning. There are 150 out there that the school district's looking at. 150. And some of them are things like a biography on Wilma Rudolph, you know, for third graders. It's funny because you mentioned some of these titles to people, like the Toni Morrison book, The Bluest Eyes. My daughters read the book. They loved the book. It's crazy that we're sitting here worrying about books when we've got so many other issues that are out there. And it's not like these books are being forced on the kids to read. What are we going to take? The next step is going to be Shakespeare. Next thing, Tennessee Williams. It's going to be, we're going to see, you know, so many of the classic things kids are not going to be able to get in high school or elementary school or wherever their phase are. And the way the system is going in Florida colleges, you're not going to be able to read these books either because we're now putting, politicians are now getting involved in education at the college level. So our kids are going to have to go out of state to read classics and to gain better understanding. You know, one of the things I do when I talk to writers and people when I talk to students that are looking at being, you know, if they want to be a writer, one thing that I talk to them about all the time is, what are the things I need to do? I said, one, you need to read. You need to read the classics. You need to read Fitzgerald. You need to read Hemingway. You need to read Shakespeare to understand the human condition. And what we're doing by banning books is we're taking out that learning process for our kids. We're so worried that our kids are so delicate that they cannot discern and think for themselves. Scary, scary, scary. All right, we know that the Downtown Improvement Board has got a roundtable coming up, and we've got Walker Wilson on the line to give us the details. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning, Rick. How are y'all?
Doing well. I tell you what, if Auburn could have made free throws, they would be in the Sweet 16. It was amazing. Yeah, it was 10-point lead at halftime. And then just Houston just started filing their bigs and realizing they couldn't make free throws, and that was the end of the game for them.
That was, yeah. Sad to see classic Auburn be up and give us some more hope and just take it all away.
All right, tell us about this roundtable. What are you looking for? When is it? What are the times?
Yeah, so we're going to actually meet tonight at the Bowden Building, which is at 120 Church Street, right there behind the Pensacola History Museum, at 5:30 tonight. We'll be there for about an hour and a half. At our last board meeting, Nathan Holler, one of our board members, you know, mentioned that we need to try and give folks an opportunity to get in front of the board or at least have discussions that are outside of our board meetings itself, as we meet once a month at 7:30 in the morning at the end of each month. And so we're trying to give people an opportunity to come down and sit around and talk about what's going on downtown at a different, you know, time during the day. And so we're going to try and do this at least once a quarter. But tonight we're going to sit down, just kind of talk about, you know, what the DIB is, what our mission is, what we're trying to do with keeping downtown clean, keeping it safe, and making sure that we're doing our best to market downtown and get folks to come down and see what shops and restaurants we have. We're also going to talk about some opportunities that we might have on different economic development projects that the board could look at doing. So how can we invest, you know, the tax dollars we receive from those downtown to benefit these businesses in the best way possible. I was in Tallahassee early last week and meeting with our counterparts from around the state, from Tampa and Orlando and Miami and Jacksonville. And Tampa does, they do grants for their businesses where they, you know, give an opportunity for businesses to submit an application and say, hey, we're trying to do this of a project on the front of our store that's not only going to benefit our business, but bring a benefit to downtown. And so is there something there that we could maybe look at doing in Pensacola as well to give, you know, the board an opportunity to hear project ideas from these business and property owners around downtown. So it's really just a chance to give folks to sit around the table and go through what DIB's got, you know, on the docket right now, and then talk about what maybe gaps we're missing and what opportunities that might be out there.
Well, we've got some really creative business owners downtown. Look at what Rusted Arrow and Indigo have done, you know, with their shop hop idea that they've had and how well it's worked. We've seen that the different, O'Reilly's has done a lot of great things, Old Hickory. So I think that you really can tap into their creativity and their innovation and see if it can expand beyond, you know, just their place, but it's good for all the businesses downtown.
Yeah, I think so. And a lot of times, you know, these entrepreneurs are very creative in how they get things done and ideas that they come up with because as they're running a business each and every day, you know, they're trying to make sure that it's profitable and they're going to be able to keep their employees on the payroll. And so they've got to come up with creative ways to do that. And so, again, just we're sitting in a hotbed of, you know, local entrepreneurs, we might as well tap into that resource and see what ideas that they might have that would be beneficial to all of downtown and to their business as well. You know, another thing we're going to talk about is this Palafox Market extension that's coming in a couple months. We did get the electrical project passed through the city last week or 2 weeks ago. And so that'll get underway here soon. And then once that's done, we'll start operating out of Plaza Ferdinand, hopefully sometime in May, and really just want to make sure that everybody's kind of on the same page before we start seeing another, you know, 50-plus vendors down in that park each and every Saturday, and make sure everyone's kind of comfortable with how that's all going to operate as well. So, but, yeah, again, it's going to be tonight at the Bowden Building right there behind Pensacola History Museum and from 5:30 to 7, and doors are open. So we hope that we get folks from downtown, but also if there's other folks that, you know, frequent downtown, we'd certainly welcome them as well.
Great, great. Walker, one more time, where's the place and the time again for this today?
So the roundtable for DIB is tonight at the Bowden Building. That's 120 Church Street, and we'll be there from 5:30 to 7 p.m.
Okay, great. Walker, thank you. Have a great week.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Let's go ahead and break, give you the news, weather, and traffic. When we come back, we'll have Jim Ryan.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying.
We're Pensacola's first radio station, WCOA, wonderful city of advantages. Shoplifting, we're hearing more and more nationally. National retail organizations are seeing a rise in it. We've seen it on a local level with more of our stores. A lot of, if you go around, you'll see signs at some of the pharmacies and some of these places where they're saying limited number of people in the store at a time. Shoplifting is a big problem. There's some new software out there that people are trying to see if it'll make a difference. We've got Jim Ryan with ABC in Dallas. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Besides some of those signs, you might see some, right, Rick, that say biometric security is in place. What does that mean? That means that as you walk into that store, yeah, sure, they have surveillance cameras, the kind they've had for really decades, but these are special security cameras. They incorporate artificial intelligence, that is facial recognition. So if you walk into that store, you decide to steal something, walk out of the store, your image has been captured by an artificial intelligence camera that may be compared against a broader database within that company. Let's say you've gone in there before. The picture is therefore compared against one the store has on file, or it may be compared with the nearly infinite number of pictures out on the internet or on some police database. That's where the controversy comes in. Privacy specialists and advocates say that this may be a problem to, you know, innocent people who walk in, do their shopping, walk out. Suddenly they're part of a database, a picture database they didn't want to be a part of, Rick. So it's got its pros and cons, but more companies are saying, look, we got to do something to stop this epidemic of theft in our stores.
What happens if someone's flagged on their way in? Are they asked to leave? Do we know how that it's going to be used by the stores?
That has happened. There's a great example that Madison Square Garden in New York, they started using this kind of technology. There are specific people they've told not to come in, some attorneys who have filed suit against Madison Square Garden. So their pictures are on file. So if one of these attorneys tries to walk in, the security comes over and says, we need to ask you to leave. We recognize who you are, even if you've never been in that place before. And you're turned around at the door and told you can't come in. So yeah, that's one option. Other places may be a little more discreet about it. They may let you get in, take the stuff, get out, and then contact the police and say, we believe that, Rick Outson came in and stole something. Why don't you go get him? And police may not do it.
Well, I meant to pay for it. But I could see it being used in a situation. You're right. You know, at least let's say it's a busy retail store. They've identified you. They may keep an eye on you, a tighter eye on you when you walk into the store. That could be the other thing that happens. I could see that too.
Well, sure. But I mean, there's also the possibility of profiling. You know, somebody walks into the store and they meet a specific profile that's flagged within this artificial intelligence, and somebody who's completely innocent may be followed around the store. We've seen this happen before, completely outside of facial recognition.
Right. Great. Jim, thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Period. Go pay for that, whatever it was,
yes.
By the way.
Yes, sir. That's what my mom says too. Okay, all right, bye. Standing in the dark of the Hampton, trying to get to Holland, a friend. The man in the match says, you've got to go back. You know, they didn't even give us a chance. Christ, you know it. We are 1370 AM, 104.9 FM, WCOA Real News with Rick Outson.
Today, March the 20th, was the anniversary of John Lennon. He married Yoko Ono on this day in 1969 at the Rock of Gibraltar in Spain.
And they say that was the end of the Beatles.
Well, the Beatles were already over.
They would never get back again. All right, I'll keep going until I get it right, Cena. All right. Matt Gaetz sent news out over the weekend that he has moved out of Escambia County over to Crestview. Really, and it's not news. He hasn't really been here for a while. His office in Seville Tower has been closed since the start of COVID. Because how do I know? Because everyone comes knocking on my door looking for him and can't. The floor is locked.
Even your office?
They can't. The elevator won't stop on that floor. So he has been out of this area. For someone who doesn't believe in COVID, he has used it as an excuse not to be in his office for years now. But he has moved to Crestview, which means he doesn't have a presence here in Escambia County, which is the first time we haven't had a congressman, you know, that didn't have a presence here. So I don't think it's going to make any difference. He wasn't there anyway. So, all right, LEAP, Leadership Pensacola. They have got a great new project, great name. It's called LEAP for Change. And we've got Rebecca Morris on the line now. Good morning, Rebecca.
Hi, good morning.
All right, tell our listeners about this project. When I heard about it, I really think y'all are tapping into a real need in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. So myself, along with my other LEAP classmates, we chose two projects last year. One is Feeding the Gulf Coast, and the second is CAYS Elementary. So Feeding the Gold Coast specifically is, expanding those existing services for the food pantry. And then CAYS Elementary helps expand and provide more resources for the care closet at that school.
Right. I mean, yeah, with Feeding the Gulf Coast, you're looking at pantries in Evanwood, Wedgwood, Brownsville community centers where there's a huge need. The CA Weiss has been a huge success story as a community partnership school. Children's Home Society has really done a lot there, and they've been talking the need to have, a hygiene closet as well as clothes closets. We did a story earlier this year just about realizing how poor some of these kids are, the home life they've come in from, and those type of supplies, food, and just the very basics are needed for these kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And we found that within that specific zip code, so 32505, 40% of children living in that zip code are actually living in households affected by poverty.
Right.
So this is, by us doing these specific organizations and helping them out, we feel it's going to, positively impact our community, really tackle some of the biggest issues that we're facing in Northwest Florida.
Yeah, we've got Rebecca Morris. She is part of leadership Leadership Pensacola class of 2023. Their project is Leap for Change. Rebecca, if someone wanted to help and donate to your project, how can they do that?
Yes, so we have several convenient ways for people to support our project. The easiest way is our text to give option. So people can text LEAP 2023, and that's LEAP 2023 to 44321. And then also we do have a website, which is very easy to give as well. That is leapforchangepensacola.org, and that's LEAPFORCHANGE, pensacola.org. And as soon as they go to that website, they'll see the donate button right there at the top.
Okay, great. This is a great project. I've got a passion for helping the zip code 32505 because we see the same things that y'all see, the same statistics.
Yeah.
And I think this is important. If we could just get the Children's Trust to agree, but we'll get them there. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care. All right, listeners, we'll have this information up on the blog a little bit later today with the podcast. I'll put the whole press release out there for you again. What we've seen a leap over the last couple of years is really getting into the nitty gritty of trying to enhance those projects out there that are already working to work. And this one's working with Feed the Gulf Coast and with Children's Home Society at CAY. So this is not creating something new that may not be sustainable, but making something that's already working that much more effective. Really, really cool to see. So I did spend my off time when I wasn't here going through the last Escambia County, Escambia Children's Trust meeting, where they went ahead and agreed to do $1.6 million for Help Me Grow. Focuses on identifying and helping kids with developmental disabilities and doing it from 0 to 3, try to identify it early. Nobody is upset. Everyone agrees that needs help. We have got about 16% of our kids in public schools have disabilities, which is just about in line with the state. State average is 15%. So it's not like we're overly worse than any other place in the state. We're about at the same level. But the thing that gets me about this is that Tammy Greer told the board that this fits our strategy. This is our strategic plan. We said that we put it down as a tactic, and that we would roll out in the third quarter, and we're ahead of schedule. So I said, well, maybe I've messed up. Maybe Help Me Grow was always part of the plan, and the board had approved it, and I shouldn't have been as critical of it. So I pulled out the plan. There is no help me grow as a strategic. Their plan, what they were supposed to be coming up with and approve, was to fund a local provider to develop a comprehensive coordinated system to perform routine health assessments, including preventative care and wellness visits, mental health, immunizations, screenings for vision, hearing, and speech, dental, and developmental status. There's no age group identified in this, but what they're saying is help me grow is only going to take care of one part of that, the developmental section. For you know, really 0 to 3, they say they'll go up to 8. But what happens about the dental? What happens about the immunizations? What happens with mental health? What happens with routine health assessments? What happens to preventative care? What other coordinated comprehensive system are they going to bring to the table? Or did they always have in mind, help me grow? And did they purposely create a very general, vague tactic so they could slip in, help me grow, because that's where they always wanted to go? They want us to trust them. They want us to let the process work, let them do whatever they want to do. But I really feel that they're being less than straightforward, less than candid in what they're doing. What's up next? Next is mental health. They've got a tactic for it. What's the program they already have in mind in it? They're supposed to be designing, we're going to have a children's summit. They're supposed to have an annual communication plan, which still hasn't been announced. And they're supposed to have a public awareness campaign, which I think that was what they tried to do and the board rebelled. And then the last, I think, is they're supposed to have some an outcomes and results-based system of continuous program evaluation that they're supposed to be introducing. So we'll see what happens. The one I'm watching for is mental health. And that one's kind of hard for them to mess up. All right, we'll go ahead and break this information. I'll have it on the blog a little bit later this morning, ricksblog.biz. We'll be right back. Real news with Rick. Allison on WCOA.
It's March 20th, and on this day back in 2020, the weekend just in time for the pandemic, released After Hours, had lots of themes of anxiety and paranoia, and Blinding Lights became the soundtrack for the summer.
Very cool sound. Favor House of Northwest Florida, our only emergency center, shelter for abused people, victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. They're going through a facelift. And to tell us about it, we've got Tracy Hodson on with their executive director. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Fine. When I saw this press release, I was excited because I know this facelift has been needed. Tell us a little bit about it.
So we were able to secure funding that is going to allow us to give the interior of the shelter a facelift for the first time since Hurricane Ivan. So in almost 20 years, you can imagine what kind of wear and tear our floors have and that in our walls. And so we are able to change the flooring throughout the entire facility, have all of the rooms painted, do some minor repairs, and our kitchen's getting a facelift as well. We're super excited.
Great. Has the project already started, and how are y'all going to handle with helping people during that process while it's being worked out?
So we are all of our services will continue uninterrupted. We are transitioning our emergency shelter from the Escambia County Emergency Shelter over to our Santa Rosa shelter for the temporary. It'll be about an 8-week project, and we're targeting starting at the end of this month. And so we will be able to still accommodate emergency shelter needs. We'll still be able to accommodate outreach. And, of course, all of our education programs and our legal services will still continue uninterrupted, no problem.
You know, for our listeners that may not be familiar with Favor House, tell them what y'all do because it's so important for our community.
Absolutely. So we are the only certified domestic violence center serving Santa Rosa and Escambia counties. And our primary mission is to help people who are suffering from intimate partner violence, domestic violence. We take women, children, men. You know, if you are in an abusive relationship and you're looking for a way out, then we have services to help you. And then in addition to that, if you don't necessarily need emergency shelter, you don't need to come stay with us, we have outreach advocates who you can meet with for one-on-one counseling, support groups, educational workshops. We have an economic empowerment program to help you figure out your financial situation, help you find a job, you know, help with housing, that kind of thing. We have legal services, which help with injunctions for protection, provides, you know, free legal advice. We can't represent you in a divorce or a custody battle or anything like that, but we can definitely point you in the direction of people that can help you with that. And then, of course, we have a kids program that helps the kids that are coming through our shelter.
You know, it's one of these quiet things that people don't realize how big a problem domestic violence is in our community. Talk a little bit about that, because I know that it's not going down.
Oh, no, it's not. Excuse me. Sorry about that.
That's okay. It happens
no,
all the time.
Unfortunately, it's really not. Last year, we saw in Escambia and Santa Rosa County, we saw 6 homicides that were domestic violence related. And there was very few days where you didn't pick up a paper and didn't see, you know, somebody who was being arrested for or charged with domestic violence. We are consistently getting, you know, police reports that are showing, you know, that our statistics locally definitely are not decreasing. And, you know, the only thing that, you know, we can do is to start really looking at our system and how we're providing services to domestic violence victims. And as a new executive director with a fresh perspective, you know, I feel like Favor House is poised to once again, be the leader in domestic violence and family violence in our community, and we're looking forward to that.
Wow. Well, if someone wanted to help Favor House, and I know y'all always are looking, you know, you could use all the help you can get, as many can. What are some of the items that you're open for donation or just for cash donations? How can they get money to you?
So, well, to be perfectly frank, cash is king. It is always the thing that we are looking for. However, there is a needs list on our website, as well as volunteer opportunities that can be found at favorhouse.org. And there, the list that's on there are consumables that we go through consistently. You know, we're serving an average of 30 people in our shelter each month. And then in addition to that, we haven't, you know, we're averaging about 60 to 70 other people that we're serving. And so the items on that list are things that we are consistently giving to the people that need them, as well as what we need to run the shelter.
Okay, great. Tracy, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. I hope you have a great week.
You too. You too. Take care.
Right, thank you so much. All right, bye-bye.
Favor House is important for us as a community. I've seen you for a long time. You were a board member. It is, we did our first story, with Favor House, gosh, back in, 05. It really kind of sprung out of, one of our children's friends, has got, beat up by her father. And we immediately got on the phone and called Sue and got the family to the police station and then to them to help. And it was a family that you wouldn't have thought something like this would have been an issue. It was a surprise.
It happens to everybody. In all walks of life.
Right. So it is if. So I was able to do, and Sue Hand's no longer with us, and Tracy's doing a great job of taking her place, is that's who I called when this came into our life and what we were dealing with. And it is to be able to have someone who can help and understand that it's out there. It's quiet. Sometimes you don't notice it. Sometimes you do. She came to our house and we took care, tried to help and brought her to Favor House. So it was a very,
And when you donate, do you remember that there's children there in the shelter and, it's worthwhile to give.
It truly, truly is. All right. When we come back at the top of the hour, we're going to talk about banned books. There are four more books that are out there. Books that actually were approved when the educators reviewed them, when the district's appeal process, they found that there was definitely literary and educational value to these books. However, the person who complained is upset because she doesn't like some of the words used in that book. And that, you know, even though these are for high school students, that they don't need, this doesn't need to be in her school or any school in the Escambia County School District. And so we're going to bring someone in actually on the other side of the page. I tell you what we found in covering the book banning process is teachers are afraid to speak out inside the school system because they're in an environment where if you do not follow the commandments, you do not follow the orders of the state legislature, you could lose your job. Which is why so many educators are leaving on their own. But we'll have Linda Fussell on when we come back, and she'll talk about it. Big meeting tonight on four books at 5:30 today. We'll be right back.
1370 WCOA.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Rick Outzen. Gosh, it's Monday. The weekend is a long way away. We've got a lot of important meetings with the school board this week. They're doing a special meeting today at 5:30 at the Hall Center on banning whether to ban four more books. The appeal, the original review by the district's educators said that these books had value. The person who filed the original complaint has done like she's done with everything. She knows more than district officials. She's going back to the school board and trying to appeal to them with the most shocking, what she considers the most shocking words in a book to get them to go with her and keep the books out of the school system. The four books are The Bluest Eye by Toni Morris, New Kid by Jerry Craft, Drama by Rihanna Telemeyer, and The Nowhere Girls by Amy Reed. My kids have read these books and loved them when they were in school. They're now in their 40s and 20s. They asked, why is this happening? And what we've seen in the school system is teachers are afraid to speak out. You've got one English teacher in Northview High School that's dictating every other school in our district what they can have in their classrooms and in their libraries. Essentially, that's what's happening here. And they're afraid to speak out because they're afraid they'll lose their jobs. Fortunately, we have some retired educators that have come out very forcefully against this book banning, and one of them is Linda Fussell, and we have Linda on the line now. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Why get involved in this? Why take on this fight?
Well, I was a teacher for 24 years in the Escambia School District. I, too, came in contact with these books in terms of recommending them for children to read. You want to engage children. There is presently a 49% proficiency rate in Escambia County Schools, and anything that a teacher and or media specialist or anyone can do to assist, obviously, will go a long way in helping with their success, with student success later in life.
Yeah, you know, Lenny, you bring up a really good point that's completely lost in all of this culture war over books in schools is that we're not doing that well in language arts in Escambia County. And one of the challenges of a teacher is to find a book that excites a child about reading, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. I know that teachers are working tremendously hard in Escambia County now and when I was, working also And they work every day at the writing. They work every day at reading. And sometimes it is more challenging to find a book that a kid will like and that will engage them. And I know that media specialists are particularly hardworking. They know a lot about their school. They know a lot about their students. And they order books based on professional reviews as well as interest of the kids. So all of that goes into, you know, picking and choosing a book.
Well, and have you ever seen a book make a child gay?
Not yet.
No. I mean, it's to get their interest.
No.
And kids are able to just, you know, kids read, if they read enough books, they can discern the parts that some parts are going to teach them and some parts are going to kind of read through. You could selectively pick a lot of books and find a word here or a paragraph there that taken out of context sounds so offensive, or maybe even, I don't know if it sounds pornographic, that is Vicki Baggett's catch go-to for everything, but it definitely, kids can discern and work their way through challenging topics, can't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, the right to peruse the library, the right to go through and look at the shelves and pick up a book and open it up and look at it and think you might be interested in it and take it, or you're not interested and you can put it back on the shelf. And when you get to those parts that you're referring to, a lot of times kids will skip over them. It doesn't become such an essential part of the whole story that is, you know, trying to be expressed by the author. So it's very frustrating. And, you know, one of the difficulties I think that teachers are having, everybody's having, is the new laws that have been passed that are very vague and that you kind of just have to try and decide and decipher what the actual meaning of those laws are, and so that everybody is in compliance. I know that is also part of a consideration too.
You know, the other thing someone shared with me the letter you sent out over the weekend to people on how they can come to the meeting today at 5:30 at the Hall Center for these books. But one of the things you point out is there were already, if parents didn't want their children to read certain books, there was an option for them already that the school district has offered, isn't it? Isn't there?
There has always been an option. I taught for 24 years. There is always an option to opt out of books, movies, anything, and have an alternative assignment if necessary. There has always been that option that has never been taken away.
Yeah. You know, and here we are, now we're taking, not only, there is no option now, it's only one person, it appears, you know, one person putting the school board under such political pressure that they are afraid about getting reelected, so they're willing to go with what one person wants versus the review process. And what are your thoughts on the review process? I've kind of looked at the spreadsheets. It seems that the district is doing a fairly good job of reviewing the books, and this is an appeal.
Compared to the rest of the state, our district is very transparent, which has been a really good thing. Michelle White, who's the media services director, has done an excellent job of having to keep up with all of this. I think the district committee process is pretty good. You have a group of people who are like boots on the ground people, administrators, media specialists, teachers, a parent with a kid in the school and a community member. They come together, read the book. They have been, the laws have been explained to them, and they look at it, you know, and talk about it and determine, is it, you know, worthwhile? Is it a piece that is valuable? Is it can it be kept in the libraries? And for the school board to not take the recommendations of that district committee that they put together themselves as part of their policy that they agreed to in December is very frustrating, because these are the professional people. They have degrees, they have certifications. So, you know, it is very important, I think, because they know what's going on with the kids. So
the process is good. I'm not sure that it's because everybody wants to be reelected or things like that. I don't know how much that plays into it, but I think that they need to be more intent on giving credit to their district committee that they have set up.
Interesting. I assume that you'll be there tonight. You're encouraging people to wear red in support of keeping the book.
Red for Ed. Yes.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for coming on. Anything else you'd like to say before you go? I'm sorry.
These are very difficult times. We need to support our teachers. We need to support our media specialists, particularly. COVID has really done really a number on education, and it's going to take a while to, you know, bounce back. So, and unfortunately, again, in the 24 years I was teaching, we never had anything at all like this happen. You might have one book, you know, one or two maybe in within 5 years or so, but there's 177 books that are challenged, and it is an overwhelming job for everybody.
Linda, thank you.
But thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for coming on. Good luck tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Because shade never made anybody less gay. We're Pensacola's first radio station. Started in City Hall nearly 100 years ago. Owned by the city. There weren't enough radios in town, so they broadcast it over loudspeakers to people sitting in Ferdinand Plaza the first time they did it. It is, and we're still here. We're that wonderful City of Advantages, WCOA. Real News with Rick Outson and Cena. You passive. You hit a note here.
Passive aggressive. Taylor Swift kicked off her Eras Tour over the weekend and released a couple new songs. Had two shows in Glendale, Arizona. She's going now to Vegas.
We've covered a lot today. Just, you know, I wanted to come back big, and I think we've done it today. A lot of things going on. The school board is meeting today at 5:30. They will be discussing four more books that the English teacher at Northview High School still believes, even though the other educators, the review committee said they saw value in keeping these books. She still wants them gone. School board will consider it today. It doesn't look like anything. We're having a school board overrule district committees like we've never seen happen before. So it is, thank you for those that are willing in the school district to fight for the books, because teachers are afraid for their futures in education, which is why we've got over 5,000 job openings in the state for teachers, and all the incentive plans and all the things aren't working. Teachers are leaving because of the interference from the politicians, which is what we wanted to get away. He's talking about politicians. There's a group in the north end of the county that desperately wants us to go back to an elected superintendent, because they can't control an appointed superintendent. They can't get their buddies the jobs that they wanted, get the funding just for their schools, get all the perks. And the appointed superintendent doesn't work for them, but works for the entire district. They want it back on the ballot. Not only do they want it on the ballot, they want it on the ballot during a presidential primary where fewer people vote than the general election that passed it before. And we've only had one full year of an appointed superintendent. So that vote is tomorrow at 5:30. Still goes before the county commission. The county commission doesn't have to agree to put it on the ballot. If that county commission doesn't agree, it's a dead issue. So it looks right now that the board's going to get rid of these books, and go with the another referendum on whether we want to go back to an elected superintendent. Cena, what you got?
Some happy news. It appears that Finland is the world's happy place. According to an annual World Happiness Report, it ranks number one among the countries based largely on life evaluations from the Gallup World Poll. The U.S. did not get in the top 10.
We're always so angry. Yeah. We're going to see
Finland, Denmark. It's all of those countries. Iceland was number three.
Wow. I guess we're, you know, even though it's cold, and we're in the sunniest, one of the sunny places,
It's Greenland that's cold. Iceland is green.
Oh, okay.
From the movie The Player. It's a line from a movie. Luxembourg was number 9. Actually, we came in still ahead of Great Britain.
Okay.
You know, because Brexit is kind of a drag. We were number 15. Great Britain came in at number 19. And the last was 20, Lithuania.
Tough time to be a Lithuanian. All right, listen, we were seeing drone delivery companies are expanding. Zipline and Wing, two of the leading companies, have talked about they're gonna start amping up their drone deliveries for packages starting next year. So they'll be working on all the technology. They're in about a handful of cities right now where they're doing drone deliveries. Part of the problem is getting approval from the FAA, how they're going to fly, and sight lines for operators. They're looking for the average drone for zip line is they're looking at a 10-mile radius to be able to drop packages off. They fly silently at about 300 feet above their destination, then hover down and leave the package on a porch or a picnic table or in a courtyard. We'll see how this works. I'm still sort of curious to see, you know, how they're going to figure out how to deal with trees and limbs in more rural areas that are older parts of Pensacola. So we haven't seen it here yet, but we'll see what happens when it does.
We had some embargo news that just came out from ABC, sounding the alarm on climate change. The UN Secretary General is saying that humanity is on thin ice, quote, and that ice is melting fast. Antonio Guterres on Monday releases the UN's latest report on climate change and says it's a clarion call to fast-track pollution reduction efforts, including phasing down fossil fuel production, canceling new fossil fuel projects, and setting more ambitious targets to get to net zero as close to 2040 as possible. He's also releasing a video that says we have an urgent need for action. Our world needs climate action on all fronts, everything, everywhere, all at once.
Now, one of the things last week, one of the big stories we had last week was what was going to happen with the Truth for Youth building. That is the old Smith Bakery, a historic building in Belmont DeVille, across the street from Five Sisters doesn't have a roof, has had tremendous amount of damage over the years, and really not usable. Reverend John Powell has had control of that building, ownership, or had a note on that building since about 2010 for him. And his goal was to build a community center there for youth. He's had several fundraisers over the years to try to keep it going. When they lost their roof, they pretty much lost the ability to hold anything in there, much anything in there. There's an auction set up for this week. I think it's the 22nd, Wednesday, is the auction. The lien holder on it has foreclosed on the property. Now, the News Journal, I talked to D.C., Mayor D.C. Reeves, before I left town, and he was telling me that he hadn't heard for sure that the loan had happened. The News Journal is reporting that the loan that Reverend Pyle has said he's got, a bridge loan, for $900 that will pay off the mortgage. It's going to be secured by the parking lot there. I think he's given something like 8 months to pay off that mortgage. He's going to have a huge fundraiser. If he does, if he loses, you know, the person who's loaning the money will get the parking lot for development. He'll still keep the building that nobody can go in. And what he'll do with that. So in essence, he's selling off part of the property, probably the most valuable piece of that property, to keep the building for possibly a youth center. It'll be interesting to see. None of the actual things have been filed in the court system yet with the clerk of court, so we'll have to see. The auction is still on, but it is, we'll see how it works out. Of course, we also had news on the club climax. You know, they're working with the city on it and coming up with a safety plan so that hopefully that area will be safer too. Sina?
Have you seen any of the video of the stinky blob of seaweed that's our way, headed to Florida? Our gargantuan mass of floating seaweed is in the Atlantic. It's called Sargassum, and it measures 5,000 miles wide.
Wow.
It's expected to reach the Gulf of Mexico this summer and come on to Florida's coastline. It's currently pushing west and will pass through the Caribbean and up to the Gulf of Mexico in the summer, with the seaweed expected to become prevalent on beaches in Florida around July. And this is unprecedented.
I was hoping it hit the Atlantic coast. I didn't realize it was going to come into the Gulf. So we actually could see some
damage.
Yeah,
we actually could see. They're not really saying where they think it's going to go, but they're saying Gulf of Mexico. They say it's an entirely new oceanographic phenomenon, and it's creating a catastrophic problem. Over in Barbados, they're dumping 1,600 dump trucks a day full of seaweed are coming in and out.
Wow. Well, we'll see what that does to our economy. It's a stir in July.
Well, the Caribbean's getting devastated for their tourism.
Right.
Because, you know, who wants to?
Well, you know, and one of the things we learned during the BP oil spill is that we know so little about the Gulf of Mexico and the currents, because when we were trying to figure out where the tar balls and the oil would come from Deepwater Horizon, there was a whole lot of discussion and realizing that we really don't have enough scientific data to understand how the currents flow and exactly where it would hit. And so we learned some from there. But again, this is coming a totally different way. So how that impacts us up here will be interesting to see. All right, we've covered a lot for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Stacey Knowles will be in. Real News with Rick Allen.